It comes into focus, clear, comprehensible, semantic, musical, significant. But we do not notice the inaudible, which is not because it does not sound, but because we do not know how to hear it. It escapes our ears. I have political ears, social, and ideological ears, expectant ears, trained ears, ignorant ears, lazy ears, comfortable ears. I hear what I expect to hear, culturally, visually, linguistically, and musical, which looks inward onto its own scales, or it is noisy. We need to tune our bodies to perform sound and come to hear it, not as a physiological fact, but a social turn towards a sonic sensibility that sees the boundaries, the disenfranchised, the invisible, the excluded, and feels as reciprocity, as a sensory motor charge with feedback, performing reality from its invisible relationships. Listening is political. Listening to the audible produces empathy, reciprocity, and exchange. Listening to the inaudible builds the community from the invisible dynamics of that exchange and what it excludes. Listening to the audible and the inaudible we inhabit, move, and interact in the everyday, and understand not just sound, but ourselves living within it, how we move against, with, and towards each other. Practice it on the body to snap into the audible and hear the inaudible. Tweet, 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 tweet. Communication is not transmission, but a sharing that becomes subject. Sharing is subject of all subjects, an unfolding, a dance, a resonance. Sound in general is first of all communication in this sense. At first it communicates nothing except itself. At its weakest and least articulated degree, one would call it a noise. There is noise in the attack and extinction of a sound, and there is always noise in sound itself. But all noise also contains timbre, in a body that opens up and closes at the same time, that arranges itself and exposes itself with others. The noise of its sharing with itself and with others resounds. Perhaps the cry in which the child is born, perhaps an even older resonance in the belly and from the belly of a mother.
Thank you.
element that provides such a bond to say such is always, such as it is, environment and self are inseparable? They are not inseparable, as there is no difference, no separation, wherever one goes. Environment is of itself, and oneself speaks to itself. Self does not hear environment, but self sees itself, not environment. Environment keeps self from self continually. Breathing, whispering self will not hear self, will not exist. Any part of any self is a mirror, a fleeting glance. We all carry the potential of petrified wood, a branch drowning of swollen banks. Anas, platyrinkos, feeding, perceivable, symmetry, nothing held or treasured. What I see is always already gone. It engraves itself into my retina as a picture of its past. The visual object is the permanence of melancholia and history. Sound, by contrast, is the permanence of production that uses the permanence of the monument and discards it by gliding over its form to produce its own formless shape. Like the alphabet, the visual invites and enables intellectual reflection of an over there and of another time. Remote from its own production, it enables thought and engenders the idea of purpose and order by forfeiting the immediate sensibility of its own materiality. Vision captures, orders and disciplines space, but it does not see the simultaneity of its time. Visual history is the absence of what is not here anymore as it used to be, or the presence of something that was not here before. But at every moment, this absence or presence is certitude, a visual condition that is unambiguously present or absent. In this sense, vision observes Hegel's dialectical history that strives towards an ideal community that has overcome the inner necessity of its conflicting elements in the higher order organization of the present state. Time and progress are the forces of this history, pursuing through reason and logic an objective manifestation of space, defined by the values of sheer presence and sheer absence, and an ideality achieved through the antagonism. There is no ambiguity of being simultaneously, only causes, consequences, and results. Sound, on the other hand, is its immediate sensibility, unordered and purposeless, always now. The opaque and ambiguous process of living manifests itself in its sounds and appears in an engaged listening that hears the invisible murmuring at the depths of Hegel's state. It is the unseen but heard simultaneity that develops community, not as an ideal manifestation of reason between subjects, but as their coincidental meeting in affection. This is not the history of hegemony and homogeny, but of transient and heterogeneous participation. The sonic location is not the absence of the past, but is simultaneously the past and its present manifestation. One does not cancel out the other, as both live in the invisible discontinuity of my sonic sensibility now. Sound demands the vis-a-vis and sounds the now as a complex duration of past and present, continue together in the action of perception. This now is absence and presence, in the paradox of sound that is always here. It is not linear or intentional, but extensive and intersubjective, and only here on my body, which generates its time-space through the complex effort of my listening, which I extend into my contingent speech as sound again.
I was sitting in the cafe in the station, having a coffee. I was on the terrace, perched on a high stool, right near a window that looked into the bar. I could see the bar through the glass, but also the terrace and the reflection. They put a bottle rack and stuff behind the window on the bar side, so it acted as a kind of screen. But I could also see the bar and the people in the bar area getting drinks. And I could see the people on the terrace in the reflection of the window. People were walking around, moving chairs, sitting, eating, chatting and drinking. A strange thing happened. There was a thin lady in a stripy Breton top. I caught a glimpse of her gold watch, glistening in the light. I thought she was behind me. I felt a presence and was pretty sure she was there on the terrace. I thought I could see her in a reflection. I thought she was moving a chair or something. But when I turned around, she wasn't there. And this really shocked me. I looked back through the window into the bar area to the opposite point, but I couldn't see her there either. Then I saw a glimpse of her leaving the interior of the bar, slipping out of sight, just to my left. It was a strange thing, to feel a presence, to see, to think I saw something. Like to think I knew what I saw.
The artist listens to and produces the possibility of the landscape from the possibility of time and the possibility of space, hinting at the plurality of reality. And challenging the singularity it is presented as. The invisible mobility of sound informs and incites this exploration and invites the listener to enter into layers of possibility, to understand the construction of the real and participate in its reconstruction, to build a time-space world of the possible and make it count within current notions of actuality. Traditional geography produces a positivist cartography and maps without sentiment a taxonomy of place, a topological construct of the actual from above, literally and ideologically. If we take away both God's view and the platform of reason as an actual and the metaphorical position of survey and consciousness, what we are left with is a geography of doubt and anxiety, created contingently in the singular and solitary action of mapping from individual paths, a formless and untraceable landscape in that we share through our action rather than on its terrain, and whose geography remains anxious and affective, full of doubt, uncertainties, and the pathology of who we are. Human or social geography answers the positive cartography of maps, as well as the anxiety of formless mapping through its focus on human interaction within the landscape, and produces its maps from social practices and relationships. This focus on action, on interaction, in principle, opens the door for sound to enter the geographical discourse, and thus, at least potentially, invites sonic possibilities into the frame of geographical investigations. To come to think of geography not only of the visible world, but of the invisible, sonic worlds, and sonic socialities and subjectivities that might happen within them. In practice, however, sound is treated mostly as an embellishment, providing content for visual data or demonstrating processes imminently transcribed into a visual language, overshadowed by the persuasive nature of a visual topography. Sound remains unable to overturn the principles of geography to show us a more doubtful and ephemeral world from down below. How do we map the world in darkness, where the landscape is plural, opaque, and inscrutably private? What sort of geography maps the unseen mobility of sound? The most quiet. A girl is late for the French class. A girl is late. And the young man leads his new wife under the temple, into the dust under the temple. A girl is late and boys kick a football in the dust under the temple in the most quiet. A girl is late and a young man leads his new wife into the French class, into the most quiet French class. And boys kick a football in the dust. And cats curl around their ankles under the temple. In the most quiet, in the French class. A girl is late, a girl is most quiet, and the cats' tails are scythe and the boys are dust. A girl is late for the French class, and the teacher hides. And the young man kicks the dust under the temple. A young man leads his new wife into the French class, and the teacher kicks the dust. A young man leads his new wife under the temple, and the boys are most quiet. And the cats are scythe, and the girl bleeds softly into the dust. A girl bleeds. A girl is most quiet. A girl is late for the French class. The young man leads his new wife into the dust. Thank you. engenders its imagination. There are in the woods not sonic fossils, but other, present sounds, which we do not hear, and yet they impact on how we see the trees. Eisuke Yanagisawa's recording of ultrasonic landscapes are not beautiful or particularly harmonious. They clip and grate and flange and crackle, whiz and hum, sounding more like scrambled signals than a soundscape. And yet they intrigue through what they hint at and make us hear between what actually sounds and our auditory imagination. The ultrasonic recorder modifies frequencies beyond our hearing range into audible material, translating between an audible and an inaudible world, and granting access from one into the other, adding the unheard to what is audible and making the two compossible. These recordings present the inaudible as a variant of the same world and thus expand the threshold of its actuality and possibility into the invisible depth of the unheard, the impossible. The first track of the album is of bats calling, presumably in Crispicula Woods, evoking the sighting of all sorts of other creatures. Of course we know that bats exist and that they use ultrasound to find their way in the dark, but the rational understanding of this zoological fact does not thicken and mobilize the woods at night. The ultrasonic recorder grants entry into this other world and invites us to add it to the slices we know about and consider actual or possible. It gives them a deeper depth and a darker groundlessness. And so when next I step into the semi-darkness of the early evening light between trees and ferns, I will sense the agitation and mobility that composes my view. Yanagisawa's bat recorder renders the inaudible audible, not to get me to one inaudible as a mere curiosity, but to open myself to the possibility of many impossibilities, to tune my sense to what I do not hear, to make me think of all the slices of actuality that are possible but remain impossible in a zoological, structural, geographical, and so forth description, but which need to be heard in order to name, to gain and share access to them nevertheless. To talk about the inaudible serves not to create a structural reference for the possible impossible, but to gain access to it and to share those invisible points of access at the verge of possibility. Not to finalize the unheard, but to make it count. The line between what is listened to and what is heard can get precariously slim. The inaudible is not the dialectical opposite of the heard, but is the extension of its audibility, and ultimately also extends the visibility of the visual. It is anti-semantic against this, a descriptive reference to structured things and beings, but invites the extension of what can be inhabited, a semantic material, sensorial, plural, and inexplicable. I am still not sure what it is like, but I know where it is. The inaudible is where expectations, aesthetic preconditioning, musical training, as well as social and political ideas determine the non-existent, and where ideology, hope, and despair cross in the sand of social and political noisemaking.
Thank you.
the stars. When night comes, I stand on the stairway and listen. The stars are swarming in the garden, and I am standing in the dark. Listen, a star fell with a tinkle. Do not go out on the grass with bare feet. My garden is full of splinters. And now that you heard it all, I will tell you what you listened to. You heard a piece called Not Quite Sitting Down for 6 Minutes, composed by myself. And a paragraph and a listening text score. Then you heard an excerpt from Jean-Luc Nancy's book, Listening. And I played to you Patrick Farmer's piece, Like Falling Out of Trees, into collector's albums, over which I started to read Try E. Bark, some poetry by Patrick Farmer. I then read to you from my book, Listening to Noise and Silence, 2 excerpts, and followed that by playing to you from an audio excerpt from Claire Gaston's work, 7 Minutes. I read to you 2 passages from Sonic Possible Worlds, a book by myself, followed by a poem by Sarah Jackson, her book The Pelt, The Most Quiet. And you heard Ultrasonic Scapes by Aizuka Yanagisawa, followed by my reading a little bit more of Sonic Possible Worlds. The next piece was by Mikael Karikis, Sounds from Beneath, and it was followed by The Stars, a poem by Edith Lerdegron, and the piece that's playing now, you can't hear because it's too silent.